And it is that time once again, Perish of the Patriots back for the 352nd time. We just keep on trucking. I'm glad you're joining us once again this week. I like to believe, what with Sven Longshanks being back, I like to think the quality, maybe it's a delusion that I'm under, that the quality of the show is getting better. Maybe that I'm just telling myself. Maybe I'm just telling myself that, but I like to think because I have a little more time, a little more fresh, a little less on my plate. Hopefully the show is getting better. Either way, I appreciate y'all stopping by. Once again, if you're new, we do have a Christian-specific segment. It's roughly the halfway point of the show. We're going to get into it a little earlier this week because I got a lot I got to get off into the Christian-specific segment this week, and I'm trying to do well. Matt and I both, we kind of got pretty lackadaisical about keeping our shows within the allotted time amount. And now that Sven is back and we've got a stream and things are actually going into program slots like they're supposed to, we're working on getting these things in the right allotted amount of time. If you do get something out of this show, hey, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. It is appreciated. I've got snail mail. That is it. There is nothing else. Don't ask me about Bitcoin or any of the rest of it. I got an address. You can put something in the envelope that's up there for you as an outlet if you want to do that. I always appreciate the notes that come along with it. We try to use them on the show. Obviously, if you write something outrageous, I'm not going to use it. Something intentionally provocative or something. And if it's like, if you send me a book, I'm not going to sit here and read 8 pages of your manifesto in the listener supporter mailbag. But I do enjoy, by and large. Y'all don't do that. But by and large, I do appreciate it. And so with that having been said, looking in the listener supporter mailbag, no note at all. Some people do that. But I do like to give a holler out just so that you know that I did get it. You may have less than stellar confidence in the postal system. Tony, I did get it. I do. As always, I really do appreciate it. I do have one more. I'm pushing that one off into the Christian specific segment because it is basically, that's where it's going to belong. So I am going to push. I got one more coming. We'll get back into that when we get into the Christian specific segment. And that is it. That is all we've got in the listener supporter mailbag. I spent a lot of time. I get a certain amount of enjoy. It's just what I do. It's just what I do is observing the world around me. And things I find, because you get lost in your day-to-day lives. Most people do. And you kind of like, as the saying goes, you miss the forest for the trees. You know, people are so busy going through their day-to-day life. I've been blessed. I'm able to sit back. I have some time to sit back and just try to constantly take in the big picture. We live in a state here in the West, particularly in America. More and more people are getting the sense that this empire that has been built is collapsing. It's deteriorating. It's crumbling. Some people are in denial of that. The ruling class is just trying to, at this point, I think they realize it, and they're just strip mining what's left of the economy. You know, what they're filling their pockets on the way out the door. It's like being in a building and the building is on fire and these people are emptying out the cash register before they take off. They don't care that you're over there with some rubble falling on you going, hey, help me get this off me so I can get out. And they're busy stuffing their pockets at the cash register before they run out and leave you to burn in the collapsing building. These observations, we see this, it's crumbling, it's falling apart. And, it is what it is. It'll be replaced by something else. I personally am hoping for secession, that the U.S. breaks up. This is relevant, into smaller countries, because I think smaller countries become more manageable and have the potential of some sanity. But this is also relevant to Europe, our so-called Western allies, because they're reliant on the empire. And as the empire crumbles, this is going to, if you're sitting there in Germany and you say, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me, screw America. What it is, it does have something to do with you because you're a client state of the U.S. And when that falls apart, you're going to be on your own. Let's say you're kidnapped. You're a woman and you've been kidnapped, and this guy is keeping you in his cabin out in the middle of the woods. I'm not even sure where I'm going with this illustration, but I'm going with it regardless. And he has kept you in his cabin for 2 years out in the middle of the woods. One day the guy is out, you know, to the point that you don't try to escape. You're comfortable now. You know, like that Stockholm syndrome thing. You're comfortable. He doesn't even have to tie you up. You've been there long enough. You've just resigned yourself and actually have gotten comfortable. You wait around for him to bring the food. He's out grabbing food. You wait for him. He comes back. He don't even worry about you running off. Where are you going to go anyway? One day, your abductor that you've forgotten now, it's been long enough you've forgotten that you didn't come to this cabin in the middle of nowhere in the woods voluntarily. One day, a tree falls on him while he's out gathering food and he dies. Now, all of a sudden, you've got to start figuring things out because you have no idea how to get back to where you were. You have no idea how to provide for yourself out of the woods. You don't even know which direction to start going in. In other words, you're in a heap of trouble. You were better off when your abductor was around. At least he'd bring food, water. You didn't have to worry about those things. He was providing those things for you. He abducted you, forced you to be somewhere you didn't want to be. But as time went on, he became a provider and you forgot all about that. And you became reliant on them. That's why he didn't have to tie you up to a chair anymore. Because you're reliant, you're dependent upon him. Now that person is gone. And now you got to figure out, this is where these occupied nations are coming in. And you're seeing a lot of this flailing about in Japan, for instance, another occupied nation. Their Stockholm syndrome is on the extreme and they just elected this woman who I suspect is a lunatic on some form or another. And she's flailing around. You know, on the one hand, she talks about, you know, yeah, she wants to protect Japan from immigrants and things like that, that you could say, yeah, that's a good thing. And then here a while back, she comes out and starts mouthing off about they'll go to war with China if they dare to do anything to Taiwan. And it's like, with what? With who? Are you going to go draft the otakus? I mean, who are you going to go draft the 80-year-olds in Japan and make them go fight the Chinese? What the hell is this lunatic bitch even going on about? This is flailing about because on some level or another, they see where it's coming and it scares them. You know, and a lot of these countries are not going to know which way to go. You know, the U.S. disappears tomorrow. You know, in sticking with the Japan analogy, the U.S. bases in Japan are a complete disaster. The military servicemen will go out in, you know, in Okinawa, for instance, and rape Japanese girls. And the people get outraged and want the U.S. out, but the U.S. never does actually leave. But if they did leave, what are they going to do? You know, they don't, you know, how are you going to behave? You wind up with this, like, insanity or something. And, you know, if Japan falls back on what they did in their history, you know, I don't think they're poised to start getting back into militarism. I think that's a bad choice. A sane choice would be they need to do business and make nice with China and learn to get along with people in their neighborhood. The belligerent abductor is gone now. You might should start getting along with your neighbors and figure out how you can just fit in and just play your role. Threatening to go to war with China over Taiwan. It's like, what kind of insanity and lunacy is this? I was just reading this morning. I recorded the show on Saturday, by the way. I was just reading this morning, you know, they had protests in Germany because their lunatic leadership is the same thing. They sense the same thing and they don't know what to do. So the German government's passing this thing about, you know, where they may bring back the draft. And you're supposed to, they're trying to minimize it like, oh, we just, you know, if we don't get enough volunteers, we may just draft a few people. It'll be a lottery draft. Does anybody believe that shit? If you're there and they do a lottery, they say only 50% of their recruitment numbers volunteer. Gee, I wonder why nobody wants to volunteer for that. And they do a lottery to fill the other 50%. What are the chances of any of these politicians or any of these rich people, any of these important people, their kids or grandkids being drafted in the lottery. You know, it's just like here in America where the congressman's stock trades all magically win. We know the politicians' children and grandchildren, their names will magically never appear in the lottery. I think it's a pretty, I would even go so far as to say the people who do come up in the lottery are going to primarily be white Germans. Oh, yes. And of course, now all of a sudden, it will be men only. And they're defining men by biological birth. Wow, we went back to that all of a sudden, didn't we? Have we not heard for years about, well, your biological birth, gender, that's irrelevant. Your gender is what you choose it to be. Now they're talking draft. And, oh, well, you ain't going to be able to say you identify as a woman and get out of the draft, buddy. We're going off of your birth certificate. That's a handy thing, isn't it? And of course, as they try to soft sell this, you're supposed to ignore the bigger picture, the backdrop that they've been talking war with Russia now for several years. Of course, they claim it's because Russia's somehow going to attack them, which is silly. But yeah, no, people protest. They don't want any parts. Just, the point here is they're flailing about. The empire is collapsing and the client states have no idea what the hell to do. You know, is this lunatic woman in Japan going to try to recreate the Japanese empire? Is she going to invade Korea or something? I mean, what? She's talking to go about going to war and attacking China to defend Taiwan. Like that's any of Japan's business. Germany is talking about drafting people, what, to build a big army and march into Russia again? Because that worked out well last time. And regardless of your opinion, I think the last time they had a lot more competent leadership than they have now. I got up into a whole bunch of things. What I wanted to say here is what becomes more relevant is what's going to come afterwards. And the thing that drives me crazy, because you see people, they grasp this, and yet they're still stuck in this false choice. We can either establish something like what we got today, or communism. That's it. You can have this capitalist, so-called capitalist system that we have, or communism. That's it. Which one do you want? Like there's no other choices. I'm always suspicious when people try to present you two choices and say, that's it. Because most of the time, I'm going to tell you, that ain't it. They want you to think that's it. It's kind of like how our two-party system works here in America. Which side are you on? Are you on Team D or Team R? They're hoping you don't notice that you get the same policies regardless. I said this before, but it cracks me up whenever I see people commenting on the internet. You know, this is what happens when you elect Trump. Like, whatever policy they're complaining about just started this year. It's just so stupid. Always, of course, we have to bear in mind that over 50% of what you read on the internet is generated by bots now. So, you know, take any of it with a grain of salt. But the people that give you the false choice, you've got to have some version of what we're living under now or communism. And idiots will sit there and say, well, we might as well choose communism. I was reading a commentary piece the other day, and they were basically bemoaning the militarization of the empire and how much money gets spent. Oh, and as an aside, let me put a pause on that because I just remembered this, and it was so ridiculous. I saw a deal yesterday or last night, and Netanyahu called up Trump and demanded like another $48 billion. Does anybody doubt he's going to get it? It was just so he just calls up and say, hey, give me another $48 billion. We're supposed to still act like we're an independent country. You know, like I say, when I was talking about client states like those of you in Germany or if you're in Japan, I'm not insulting you. You know, at least your client state status makes sense. You lost a war and you're occupied by a much bigger, more powerful country. That at least makes sense. How do you think it feels to be an American We're a client state of this little nothing country in the Middle East. We're occupied too. They don't even have to have their own military here because they use ours against us. It's called the police. It's called the federal apparatus. But nevertheless, I got off on a side there. I was reading an opinion piece the other day, and they were pointing out that this person says something along the lines of, if we weren't spending all of this money on war, we have enough money to end poverty. That sounds nice. We could just end poverty. It's bullshit. Jesus said you will always have the poor with you. He wasn't wrong. You're always going to have poor people. You know, it doesn't mean, yeah, so forget it. We might as well just keep sending more billions to Israel. It's not what I'm saying. But when somebody makes a statement like, you know, we have enough money to end poverty. The first thought when I read that was, well, how would that work? Exactly. You know, how would that work? I'm always curious when I read somebody make a statement like that. You know, whether it's the money spent on wars or the super ridiculous billionaires that we have right now, we could, the government should, what, take their money and give it to everybody else and we'd all be rich. I mean, how would that work exactly? Communism again. We're going to try communism again. People are so damn ignorant. If you did communism again, because this we're under doesn't work, so let's try communism again. This is why they keep you in this false choice. And I'm not saying every opinion leader is in on this. A lot of them are just ignorant. They're not as smart as they think they are. The reason that people have been programmed to this false binary choice is because when you understand history, you understand that whenever communism's been done, the same people were running communism as are running the system you're under now. If you swapped out our system for official communism, they don't care because the same people are going to be running it. But you have to wonder when somebody says something, we could end poverty. What would that look like? I never understand how run-of-the-mill leftists here in America act like if you increase taxes on the wealthy, that means everybody else has more money. What? When has that ever happened? I remember when I was a kid back in like the 80s. And they were making these same arguments. They were going to raise taxes on the wealthy. And that was the implication was this means everybody else would have more money. But yet it never works out that way. And now fast forward to today and we have billionaires, Elon Musk is on the, I read a deal a while back, said Elon Musk is on the brink of becoming the world's first trillionaire. Maybe we just need to increase the taxes on him. You notice how they're never specific with that? They never say, we need the government to raise taxes on the rich, take their money, and turn around and give a check to everybody else as a dividend. We're taking Elon's money and we're giving everybody, they never do that. They just want you to think that if the government somehow gets it, that that means you get it too. And it never works out. Now we have somebody on the fixing to be a trillionaire. We have this handful of billionaires. All this wealth is getting concentrated in this smaller and smaller group of people. The middle class is virtually disappearing before our eyes. The poverty class is growing. Oh, what do you want to try? We better try communism then. That'll get a different result. How do these people imagine that working? We're just going to start paying people to just exist? How would that work? You know, are we going to include everybody in the world on that or just people in America? Because that would be kind of racist, wouldn't it? What about all, you know, they've mass imported all these people on the excuse that, well, they live in poor countries and it's sad. So let's let them come here and they can have a happier life. So are we going to, what, eliminate poverty for them too? Because it wouldn't be fair. This is a problem with letting women have any kind of say in politics. You devolve into this ridiculous emotionalism about, oh, it's sad that that person has to live in a country like that. So we got to mommy them or something. Too many men go along with that too. But yeah, this is emotionalism. And again, it traps people in this false choice. You can have what you got today or communism. Now, when I ridicule these pie-in-the-sky notions, we could just eliminate poverty and everybody could live happily ever after. That's not a defense of the current system. The idea that we have billionaires, it's ludicrous. As Dr. Johnson has pointed out on multiple times, he's articulated it better than anybody else I've heard. The modern core, this corporate is this oligarchic system. What it does is it privatizes profits. You know, in other words, they make the money and they pocket the money, but somehow they make public the debt. You know, when they lose money, the government covers it. Elon Musk is a great example of that. He didn't make all this money selling Teslas. He made all this money selling carbon credits. You know, the Tesla thing was just the vehicle by which it came. He made all that money because of carbon credits, because they made the other vehicle manufacturers buy carbon credits, and Tesla had the most carbon credits. But what is a carbon credit? It doesn't exist. It's a thing made up by the government. You see how that works? He can get rich because he came up with a new innovative idea. He got rich because, for whatever reason, that leads off into something else. Whatever reason, he got picked it. He got picked to be in on the graft. I suspect he's a lot more of a front man than what people think. Because how did he get picked to be a part of, you know, to be the front man for the graft? All of these billions and billions of dollars. There's so many ways that you could enact things. No, you're not going to, quote unquote, end poverty. That's ridiculous. Again, Jesus said you'll always have the poor with you. He meant what he said. It's just that's the way the world works. You're always going to have people that, for whatever reason, are going to be poor. You can end poverty. I can't take anybody that comes up with utopian ideas seriously, you know. You'll run into this when people start talking about different, you know, if we could establish a whatever, fill in the blank state, that would, you know. Well, you can't establish that state because eventually every form of government you come up with is going to have flaws because men are involved. You just come up with something. And what we have now in communism, I think, are the two worst choices. I think it's time to come up with something different. Going back to talking about this billionaire class and whatnot, instead of saying, oh, we're going to tax the rich more. Trust me, I've heard that all my life. It never works out that way. The reason the tax laws are so complicated is because they're telling you they're taxing the rich more, but they're not actually taxing the rich more. In all likelihood, I pay more taxes than any of these billionaires. Why? That's because that's the way, again, the government writes the laws that way. So they can go out and tell you, tell us idiots out here. I don't want to be insulting you. I don't mean. They tell all of us supposed idiots out here, the people they look upon as being idiots, they're taxing the rich. They really jacked up the prices on the rich. But they're not actually doing that. Imagine if they outlawed corporations. Now, there would be some meaningful change. I'd say one of my personal beliefs is corporations are immoral. They shouldn't be allowed to exist. The idea, the argument originally for corporations, and it wasn't without merit, was that, well, a business gets so big and they're employing all these people and they want to expand even further, but they've hit the limit. In other words, if you're a successful businessman and you grow your business, you are going to hit a ceiling to where you just can't get any bigger. You know, you're not poor, but you hit a capital ceiling. To where you can only, you've gotten so big and now you've, you know, it's like you as a person, you grow and when you're grown up, that's as big as you're going to get. You know, whatever size you are at 30 years old, that's how big you are. You might get fatter, but you're not going to get taller. Businesses are the same way. And the argument was, well, they sell shares of the business to raise more capital and then they can get even bigger. and they'll employ more people and everybody will become more prosperous. But now we're at this ludicrous stage that our economy is nothing more than various financial scams. And now you have these corporations and they're doing all of these shenanigans to just raise their stock prices for the sake of raising their stock prices so they can say their company's worth even more. Venture capital outfits buy a fairly successful business, then gut it so that on paper it's worth even more, jack the stock price up, and then cash out and pocket the difference. These are just money scams. I think a company should be allowed to grow organically as large as it can, and when it hits that ceiling, that growth ceiling, that's it. You're just not going to get any bigger. Sorry. I don't think corporations should be allowed to exist. False choice. They give us these false choices. They're just recently having this argument in the Congress over the health care. And I don't remember if I talked about this before. I don't think I did. If I did, I apologize for being a repeat. I'm getting older. Maybe I'm a sign of things to come. And you had the Team D people arguing about we got to fund these Obamacare tax credits, quote unquote, tax credits. And the Republicans saying, no, we got to fix Obamacare. We got to come up with something else. And you have the Democrats, if you understand how that Obamacare tax credits work, it's a payoff to the insurance companies. That's all it is. It's a payoff to the insurance companies. I had to do the Obamacare when I was doing my cancer stuff because, and they give you a tax credit if you're on the Obamacare. If you're not on the Obamacare, you don't get the tax credit. And they're sending like $800 a month to these insurance companies. And your deductible is so high that the insurance company is basically guaranteed in most cases not to pay a dime out. So they're collecting $800 a month welfare from the government of all of these people. And they tell idiots that, see, now you have health care coverage. Never mind you have an $8,000 deductible. So the insurance isn't ever actually going to pay anything unless you have a catastrophic incident. It's a payoff. But they go out there and tell their voters, see, we're making sure you got health care. You ain't got no health care. And then flip it over and the Republicans, their answer is we need to have health care savings account where people can put their money in an account to save up for health care. And it could be tax free, ignoring the fact that nobody, for vast majority of people, they don't have any money. They're struggling to pay their light bill. They ain't got no extra to put in no health account. And nobody's going to talk about any other options. You know, I saw a deal. I saw somebody making a clever comment on the internet a while back, and they were just like, you know, well, I believe in the Second Amendment. You know, cause somebody had made the statement, healthcare is a right. And this person came back and they were getting applauded for how clever they were. And they're like, well, I believe in the Second Amendment. But that doesn't mean that I think other people should have to pay for my guns. I may have a right to bear arms. That doesn't mean I have a right to make someone else pay for my guns. And oh, clap. And when I read that, my response was, says the boomer who's on Medicare. You know, you on Medicare, boomer. What are you on about? You on Medicare talking about, yeah, you ain't got the right to have somebody else pay for your health care. You on Medicare. Shut the hell up. They never give you any real options. They always want to keep you in a false choice. We can keep doing what we're doing with this system, or if you've had enough of it, let's give communism yet another run. There's no other choices. Don't be thinking about other choices. The only choices that exist is this current corrupt system, or let's give communism another whirl. It's really all so tiresome. I could go on about this, but I needed to wrap up earlier, and because I know we're going to go long in the Christian specific segment. I got to cut it short. Maybe we'll revisit this next week. Maybe, probably not. I'll probably be off on something. I'll forget all about it and be off on something else. But yeah, we're going to run long today. So as I said earlier, I've been trying to do better on my show discipline and keeping it within the allotted amount of time here. And I think this week's going to be a failure. So we got to wrap this up. We got to get into the Christian specific segment. This is the good part anyway. You know what to do. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. And returning once again to listener supporter mailbag, GPD, please use this small tithe as Christ and you see best fit. I sure am happy that Longshanks is free now. Thanks for helping keep the media operations operating in his absence. I'll stop there and say, man, you don't even know, man. It's great having. I almost feel like I'm on vacation. It's taking quite the load off. And again, I've said this several times, but I'll say it again that, you know, I appreciate, you know, all of us, Dr. Johnson, Sven and myself, we appreciate all of y'all who have stuck with us through this time. And Sven's already doing a whole lot more with the site. He's got chat rooms up, streams up, more content. And, in a way, it's been like a really short couple of years. And in another way, it's been really long. So it is great to have Sven back. Now, I want to get back to the rest of this, why I put this in the Christian specific segment. Anyway, going back to the note here, ever ask a Jew what tribe they're from? Most of the time, they can't answer. One tribe called Judah, not Jew. Where is the tribe of Manasseh, Ephraim, Gad, Dan, etc.? Dan, maybe equal Sweden, Danish, sons of Isaac, Isaac's sons, Saxons, perhaps. When getting towards a Christian identity, we're getting towards Christian identity now. I recently did research on the deep history of the Khazars, They formed the Khazarian Empire in the middle of Russia in the 8th century AD. Arbitrarily declared themselves Jews. Well, two websites popped up with two Khazarian professions of history, and they both said before the 8th century they migrated from a place mentioned in the Bible as Mount Seir, also referred to as Selah in the Christian Bible, by the psalmist, where some of the most wicked people lived. Also, I'm trying to read off of this. That's why I'm sorry if y'all stay with me on my reading here. I should have better prepared, but we're going to get off into a lot of this. So I want to just run through it, and then we'll get into the meat of it. Anyway, also in the modern English known as Petra. This is where the Christian Bible strongly identifies, or this is where, I'm sorry, the Christian Bible strongly identifies as an area heavily populated by the enemies of the whole house of Israel. The giants, Canaanites, etc. There you go. We are, who are the modern Jews, really? Double head slap by Christ, back to back, chapter, same verses, Revelations 2:9 and Revelations 3:9. Hello, wake up in Christ, love. And that's from CJ. Thank you very much, CJ. And I wanted to get into this a little bit. I was actually thinking about this, getting into this topic a little bit the other day, and I really kind of decided against it. And then I got this note in the listener supporter mailbag this week, and I'm like, well, we'll get off into it. I'm not going to spend the whole segment on it, but it is worth discussion because it is a stumbling point, I think, for a lot of believers. Again, the goal of this show, this segment, is for people who are already believers who may struggle with certain points. And I don't ever claim to have all the answers, but what I do see in my views on things and what answers I think I do have, or what I think might enlighten and help somebody, that's what I share here. I don't claim to be a biblical scholar or anything such as that. I don't wait off into Christian. People can have a hard time categorizing me. I remember years ago, before he went away, you know, Sven would sometimes refer to me as an evangelical, and I'd be like, bruh, don't be smearing me like that. I've had people, you know, assume I'm full on Christian identity, and it's just like, well, I just seek the truth. I don't really go way hard on the CI thing for the simple fact that there is a certain subsect of that that falls back into the trap of, well, if you're of this ancestry, you're automatically saved, and it diminishes salvation through Christ. And I think it's always, we never want to lose sight of our salvation. The gospel is one of Jesus Christ, and we don't want to, well, we're automatically in if we're of this lineage. I'm not painting all of CI with that brush. I'm not implying that in any way, shape, or form. But I have seen a subsect of that that do kind of, I think, fall into that trap. So I don't like to dwell on it much. But I was thinking of this very same question the other day, because it is a stumbling block, and it's one placed intentionally, especially in these Christian Zionist, fundamentalist, evangelical, whatever you want to call them, churches. It's done intentionally, and it is a stumbling block. I am currently my New Testament reading right now, and I'm always in an Old Testament and a New Testament reading at the same time. And my current New Testament reading is in the book of Romans. And in the book of Romans, Paul is writing, and towards the very first, there is a lot of this Jew-Gentile talk. And as I was reading through this, I was thinking about how this would really be a stumbling block for people. When they're reading all of this reference to Jews, and you bring it up here in your letter, CJ. And so I thought we would get into, you know, understanding this a little bit, at least for some clarity in our parts. This isn't about trying to convince non-believers of anything. This is about strengthening our own faith. And you hit the nail on the head. These people we have today, that call themselves Jews, they're by and large, They're Khazars. They're basically from Eastern Europe. They started calling themselves Jews. They were interacting with Muslim empires and the Christian side of Europe. But you when people read, like in the book of Romans, and they see Paul, or they see it written, you know, Jews, and they just automatically associate it with these people today, with the people occupying Palestine today, with these people now today. This is why I beat a dead horse to death, but it really, I can't encourage fellow Christian believers enough not to abandon the Old Testament, because it really gives you more of a complete picture, I should say, than you're ever going to have just reading the New Testament. You know, I mean, if you're a brand new believer, sure, stay in the New Testament for a while and get your feet wet and get moving and start building your faith. But at some point, as you mature, you really have got to get into the Old Testament. Most of the Bible, it consists of the Old Testament. It's there for a reason, and you really get more of a complete picture. Now, as this question, first off, when you read like in the book of Romans, and you have to remember, this has been translated. My understanding, as I said earlier, I'm not a biblical scholar, but what I've read and what I understand, you know, basically the term that got translated, I use the King James Version. I'm not using the one of the, you know, new modern translations, but, you know, this was translated primarily, you know, from Greek. And my understanding is what they translated, the term they translated to from, well, for Jew, simply basically meant people from that area. You know, well, I live in Texas. So it would be like if you use the term Texan, oh, well, they're Texans. Well, that could be a lot of things. You know, it could be someone of Anglo ancestry whose family has owned the same ranch land for 150 years. It could be a brother down in the hood in H-Town. It could be somebody whose family in South Texas, whose family stretches all the way back to when Mexico owned that part of the land. You see, it covers a fairly broad, it was a broad term. And now people translate it as a very specific people, where I believe the original texts are just referring to a general area. Now, the reason I was wanting to point out that the Old Testament is so important is when you read in the New Testament, And you read about the Jews in the New Testament. Who are these people? You know, I mean, in other words, the listener here asks, you know, who are the Jews today? But who are these Jews in the Old Testament? Or I'm sorry, in the New Testament? When you read through the Old Testament, you don't really see this term. I find that interesting because you had Jesus in the New Testament and he's dealing with the Jews, and primarily they're talking about the Pharisaical sect here. As a listener asked, so does Jews mean the tribe of Judah? Well, I don't think that's so, because when we look in the Old Testament, the priest class, the people who were basically the tribe that was in charge of doing the things of God, tending to the temple and things such as that, were the Levites. There's nothing in here when you read about the interactions with the Pharisees and whatnot in the New Testament. These people are obviously not Levites. And yet in the Old Testament, under the law, the Levites were the tribe in charge of handling the religious matters, the things of the temple and whatnot, the sacrifices and things such as that. So again, who are these guys? Who are these Pharisees? Well, it's basically a cult. I mean, if you think about, you have a cult, you have cults today, and they will put on the trappings of Christianity. That's how they lure people in. They'll put on the trappings and carry on some of the, the window dressings of Christianity. But if you get involved with them, or if you look into them, you pretty quickly realize these people are a cult. They're not proclaiming Christianity. They're doing this other thing. And I think that's the proper way to view who these Pharisees were. They put on the trappings of Moses and the trappings of the law. Even if they were sincere in that, they had no business doing that because they're not Levites. That was assigned to the Levites. This is why I'm going to get off on a little tangent. The Levites were the one tribe that wasn't allowed to own property. Every tribe got a portion, an inheritance of the land, but the Levites didn't. They didn't get anything. That's why a tithe was established, because these people couldn't own land or anything. They had to have something to live on. Their full-time job was taking care of the temple and things such as this. They had to have a full-time, that was their full-time job. They didn't own land, so there was a tithe, so they would have something to be supported off of. It makes it pretty silly when you see these preachers in a mega church that are rich, you know, wearing, I don't know, $5,000 suits or whatever the hell else, talking, you know, doing a whole sermon on you need to tithe because Jesus wants you to tithe. It's commanded in the Bible. They're always real particular about which passages in the Bible, especially the Old Testament, that they refer to. The Bible in the Old Testament. I think the only thing these people understand from the Old Testament, or ever quote rather from the Old Testament, not understand. Definitely correct that. The only passages I think these people quote from the Old Testament is Genesis 12, that we got to support Israel because God said so, and the need to tithe. God wants you to tithe. And so many people don't even understand the reason there was a tithe the Sabbath was because the Levites couldn't own anything, basically. I mean, they could own their clothes and they weren't like homeless, but everybody else got land, and land meant you could raise crops. You could have animals, you know, herds, flocks of sheep or whatnot, and make a living. The Levites didn't have that. Their full-time job was manning the temple and taking care of the religious matters. So the people paid in a tithe. So these people would have something to live in. Everybody contributed because these people were doing the work of God. Again, these Pharisees aren't that. They're not Levites. There's nobody I know of that claims the Pharisees are the Levites. So again, who are these people? But what, they were a cult. They put on the trappings of Moses. They put on the trappings of the law. They gave lip service to that. You remember, and I'm not going to sit here and pull up the exact chapter and verse, but Jesus told them, you know, you have replaced the laws of God, or the laws of God with the laws of men. And he gave the example of, God commanded, honor your mother and father, but you say, oh, well, that's set aside for God so that you can just use it yourself. And as such, you dishonor your mother and father. And he says you do that in all sorts of things. He's pointing to the fact that these people are cult. They put on the trappings of the law. They put on the disguise, and they wore the costumes and claimed to be a priestly class. They had no right to be a priestly class. That's a Levite's job. So who are these guys? This is a cult. As I said, my goal is to strengthen people's faith and make things easier. What I recommend when you read the book of Romans, for instance, and again, at the, towards the very beginning of the book of Romans, Paul's getting off into this, what value is there in being a Jew versus being a Gentile? When you read that, replace Jew with Israelite. That if you do that, this makes a lot more sense, because he's talking about, you know, there's value in this, because this is who the law came from. This is where the foundation was laid with the Israelites and the giving of the law. And I'm going to get in. I intend to get into talking about the value of the law here. And I'm actually going to read a little bit from Romans here in a few minutes. But if you read in there Israelite instead of using the term Jew, I think it'll click a little easier in your mind. This isn't about, you know, trying to make it say what you want it to say. It's about making it easier to understand, because it's the correct terminology. Now, this always circles back to, do these modern self-proclaimed Jews have anything to do with these people in the Bible? Because a lot of times it seems like, from our standpoint, we're trying to have it both ways. We're trying to say these people have nothing to do with the people in the Bible, but then we'll flip it around and say, yeah, they're just like the Pharisees. You see, Jesus himself called, you know, called them the synagogue of Satan or whatever. And it kind of comes off sounding like we're trying to have it both ways. I would say spiritually, by their fruits you will know them. Spiritually, yes, there is a very much a relation, because you see a similarity in the patterns of what they would do. You know, the Pharisees would manipulate the system, the law, use the government to punish their enemies, to try to destroy their enemies. So spiritually speaking, just going by the fruits of what they do, they're very much as a relation. There's a parallel there. And obviously I'm painting with a broad brush when we're talking about this. You know, I know not every single one and all that. That goes without saying. We're an advanced course here. So spiritually, yes, you can lay parallels. But you know, what about, you know, is there a actual racial genetic connection between these self-proclaimed Jews today and the people back then? And again, I don't claim to be an expert. My answer to that is maybe some. And as I said, I was reflecting on this the other day. I think here's an example I think would make it easy to keep in mind. Let's say you had somebody who's a great, great, great or whatever granddaughter of Thomas Jefferson, just one of the founding fathers of America. You know, and she's got a direct lineage. You trace her lineage directly, boom, to Thomas Jefferson. Now, she winds up having a child with an African-American, with a black man. So she has a half-black child. The child grows up. Most of the time, a half-black child will wind up being with a black person. That's just statistically what happens. Bear with me here. We're going somewhere with this, I promise. Anyway, her half-black child grows up and also has a child with a black person. Now, that child grows up is basically one quarter white. And you repeat this two or three or four more times. Now, as you get four generations down from here, does the child have a direct lineage to Thomas Jefferson? Well, if you searched their DNA, the answer would be yes. I mean, you could find probably a genetic marker and say, yeah, this is the, you know, 10 times great grandchild of Thomas Jefferson. But would anybody look at this child and say, yep, that I see this child and I think Thomas Jefferson? In other words, at what point in time do you water down the genetics to where any actual genetic relation is, shall we say, tenuous at best? You see what I'm saying? I think that's just a good way, and it's just kind of a general illustration. But if somebody is struggling thinking, well, are they might have some sort of relation to them, think of it that way. There may technically actually be a connection, but at some point in time, are you not that anymore? You know, nobody's going to look at this 10X great-grandchild of Thomas Jefferson and really say, yeah, that's the direct descendant of Thomas Jefferson. Because at some point in time, you've intermingled enough with other peoples that you've watered down the bloodline to the point that it's tenuous at best. I don't want to get off in the weeds on that, but it is just one way to look at it. So yeah, when you read Romans, and we're going to get into this because I've used basically 20 minutes of this on this subject. But when you read, for instance, in Roman, as Paul is talking about Jews and Gentiles, take the word Jew and replace it with Israelite. Because if you think in your mind that Jew means the tribe of Judah, well, you're still basically talking Israelites here. So you're not, yeah, you know, it'll make it click better because he's talking about, you know, well, yeah, there's value in it because this is the foundation. This is where the law came from. And, it didn't come from the Pharisees, obviously. We've already established that that was basically a cult. Now, I wanted to get into Romans 3. Let's see, we're going to do 19 and 20. I think we're going to do some of the verses at the end. Bear with me here a little bit. So, yeah, let's do 19 and 20. Then I think we're going to jump down to verse 28 in the same chapter. Paul writes, "Now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law, that every mouth may be stopped, and all the world may become guilty before God. Therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh be justified in his sight, for by the law is the knowledge of sin." And then I say we're going to jump down to verse 28 and finish out the chapter. "Therefore, we conclude that a man is justified by faith without the deeds of the law. Is he the God of the Israelites only? Is he not also of the Gentiles? Yes, of the Gentiles also. Seeing it is one God, which shall justify the circumcision by faith and the uncircumcision through faith, do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid, yea, we establish the law." Remember this last part. We establish the law. People read this first part that we went through, where it talks about not the deeds of the law. You know, therefore, by the deeds of the law, there shall no flesh be justified. But we want to also have the context of here at the end where he says, yea, we establish the law. We always have to remember Jesus said himself, he didn't come to do away with any part of the law. And in a lot of churches, I think, get this wrong. You know, well, the law just doesn't exist anymore. It's cast out. But Jesus, look, either they're wrong when they say that the law doesn't exist anymore, Jesus has completely thrown it out, or Jesus is a liar, God forbid. Because Jesus himself says, I haven't come to do away with one tittle of the law, one, you know, punctuation mark of the law. So what does this mean? The law gives it, and always remember, this isn't talking about what food you eat and those things about, you know, celebrating this day or that day. And this day is a holy day and a Sabbath. That's not the law that's being referred to. We're talking about the law, you know, God's laws of behavior, how the natural order works. The natural order is my always way I go to think about God's laws, how we're supposed to function. The law gives us a metric. You have to have a standard. As is written, you know, we know what sin is because of the law. If we didn't have, in other words, you have to have a metric. You have to have something to measure by to understand. If somebody says, well, that's sin, well, that's just their opinion. You have to have something to base that on. And this is what the law gives us. The law remains, I've said this before on a previous show, you know, everybody, when we meet our end, when our time is up in this world, everybody's going to be treated fairly. You know, and for those who are not under Christ, there has to be some fair metric by which they are judged. This is where the law comes into play. But the law also serves us. Remember that last part? We establish the law. The law for us as believers gives us a metric for ourselves. How are we doing? You know, because I don't know about you, but for me as a believer, I'm constantly looking at myself and going, how am I doing with this? You know, am I spiritually maturing? Am I gaining more knowledge? Am I getting closer to God? Or am I stagnant in this area of my life? Where am I doing? Where's the progress? How am I doing? Well, you have to have some firm metric by which you can measure that. Otherwise, you're just going off of emotion and opinion. The law gives us that. We have the law. We look and say, well, you know, I'm still working on these areas of my life and trying to do better and gain knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. You know, but over in here, I've made a lot of progress. I look back 20 years ago and you know, I've come a long way in that regard. Remember, yes, we are saved by faith. Our faith, though, is expressed. It's manifest in our actions. I think it's a really hard thing for a lot of people to wrap their minds around. But we're not saved by our deeds, by following the law. Yes, you are correct. We're not saved by trying to follow a bunch of rules and follow, you know, basically fake it till we make it. We're saved by our faith. But your faith, if it actually exists, this is how everything ties together. Jesus said, by their deeds you will know them, by their fruits you will know them. If somebody says, I've got all kinds of faith in God, and they're out there just a complete degenerate, you know, just a total piece of shit out there, just a total degenerate, living a full-on life of sin, then you will say to yourself, well, he's a liar. Where is his faith? A man living by faith, it will be manifest in his deeds. This is why he says, it's what we just read here, the law is manifest. We are manifesting the law. We are verification. Our deeds are going to testify. You're going to see it come about. By the fruits you will know them. The law gives us a metric by which we can evaluate ourselves, and people can evaluate us. If you're just living in debauchery and claiming to have all this faith in Jesus Christ, you're full of it, and nobody can take, you know, nobody should take you seriously. If you're obviously, I mean, no man is without sin, but if you're obviously really striving and working and you're making gains and trying to do better and live a life closer and closer and gain knowledge and wisdom of understanding of the Lord, then yes, obviously your faith is being manifest. We can look and say, yeah, this, you know, this guy's doing so. What the MCC, what all these heretical denominations have done, is they've blasphemed and turned Jesus Christ into just live all the sin you want to without consequences. And just a freedom from consequence. Just go on and do what you want to. Just live a wicked and evil life. And don't worry, Jesus Christ is going to protect you from any bad things happening. And this just leads people on a path to hell. Now, what I find interesting, and it's taken a long way to get around to this, what I find interesting is when it comes to, quote unquote, the law and this misplaced idea of trying to be saved by the law. People, by and large, have fallen into that and don't even realize it, because in this wicked society we live in, hear me now, they have replaced God in people's lives with the state. I'm going to explain that. I'll say it again. They have attempted to replace God in the people's lives with the state. The state is the new God, and people don't realize it. You know, they go to church every Sunday, and if you tell them that, you know, this is how the world works, they'll sit there and say, well, you're crazy. But am I? Look at marriage as just an example. What role does God play in marriage? Marriage is ordained by the state. You are married if the state gives you a piece of paper and you pay them for it, and they give you a piece of paper, and yeah, you're married. You're just as married if you go before a state judge and have him marry you, or if you go into whatever church you want to go to and get married. But if you just go to the church and you don't get that piece of paper, they don't consider you married. See, the government, it's not an institution any longer that is established before God. It's an institution that is controlled and established before the state. They have morality laws. It's always funny because these people say, well, you can't legislate morality. How many times have you heard that? Because I've heard it a lot in my life. You can't legislate morality. And yet, they legislate morality all the time. When, you know, we look at Europe or Britain and have these insane hate speech laws, and they're working hard to establish those here. You have to be living under a rock to not see that they're pushing really hard to get some form of it here. You know, Trump has got a guy now in charge of anti-Semitism. And what are hate speech laws, if not morality laws? What are we already in this country have hate crime laws. You know, if you commit a crime, if they can classify it as a hate crime, you get a more severe punishment because you see why. Why? If you went and punched somebody in the face because you personally didn't like them, or if you went and punched them in the face because they're a Jew, you get a harsher penalty for your motivation. The act itself is the same act, is it not? You assaulted somebody, you should be charged, and you should face a punishment for that. Who that person is and what your motivation for punching them is irrelevant. Should you get a harsher punishment? Should somebody who punches somebody because they have a personal dislike for them, should they face a lesser punishment or rather a greater or lesser punishment than somebody whose motivation is something else? No, it's the act that you're punishing. You can't just go around punching people in the face because you feel like it. But yet we have laws on the books now, even here in America, to where, oh, well, your motivation, it was a hate crime. You punched that person because he was Jewish. Or whatever. I'm just using that as an example. Obviously, it applies, you know, oh, you punch that person because he's homosexual and you don't like homosexuals. What is that if it is not a morality legislation? That's what it is. So the same people will sit there and say, well, you can't legislate morality. They legislate morality all the time. The censorship that is done, the ridiculous levels of censorship, these are morality laws. You know, and it's funny to me because they're essentially trying to promote some form of false salvation through the law. You see, when we're warned in the New Testament as believers not to try to find salvation in the law itself, because that's not what it's for. The law, when it says the law cannot bring, when you read in the Bible, that is, we're warned that the law cannot bring back salvation. It just brings back the knowledge of sin. What he's saying, what is written, what they're trying to explain to us is you can't find salvation in the law, not because there's something wrong with the law. It's because that's not its job. That's not what it's there for. You're trying to use the wrong tool. You've got a screw sticking out from a piece of wood and you start beating it in with a hammer, you're going to cause a mess. You need a screwdriver. It's not the right tool. It's not what the law is for. That's why we're, as believers, told that the law isn't going to bring you salvation. You can't find salvation in the law. It doesn't mean the law is useless. It means it's a different tool for a different purpose. And yet, in our societies, where we have these morality laws, these hate speech laws, these hate crime laws, and things such as they're establishing a different kind of law of man, and essentially offering a false salvation. They're trying to be, we can create a utopia. You know, you're a danger to society. You look in places like Britain. And what they, you know, they throw the book. There's been many documented cases. They throw the book at people for, you know, a Facebook post because you're a horrible danger to society. This is such a serious crime. You're a horrible danger to society, putting these flyers out or saying this very rude thing on the social media. We're going to have to put you in prison for that. What are they implying? We'll have a utopia society, but we got to do something about these lawbreakers. In other words, their false law of man, they're promising some sort of salvation here on earth. You don't like the way your society's functioning? We just need to clamp down a little harder in the law and get people in line, and then everything will start working. Of course, it doesn't. Why? Because it's a lie. It's of the devil. It's a lie. The devil always inverts, takes elements of things from God and inverts them, turns it on its head, twists it around, makes it confusing, and makes a fake version of it. You see this? They try to establish a new morality with their laws. As believers, we understand God's laws and what their purpose is. It's not thrown out. It's the correct tool for a correct purpose. It's just it's not going to bring about salvation. That's not what it's intended for. We understand the role of the law. It gives us something by which to measure ourselves. We understand that we don't have salvation by the law. That, again, that's not what it's designed for. Now, if God's law doesn't bring about salvation, because that's also what it's designed for, how much less so these morality laws of men? These laws of men that promise some false promise, give you some false promise of salvation, of morality. If you just follow their rules a little closer, if you just a little tighter, we just need a little more. We just need to clamp down a little more and we'll have heaven on earth. As believers, if we're exempt, you know, if our salvation doesn't hinge on God's laws, how much less so men's laws? Remember that. This is relevant. I'm not telling you go out and just start breaking laws left and right. But when there comes a time, a good example of was all of these edicts they did during the COVID thing. You know, you're going to wear the mask, you're going to not wear the mask. You know, and they're going to hector you and say you're a bad person if you don't do this latest thing we're saying everybody needs to do. Because I think on some level or another, when you look at what happened with the mass and the stand 6 foot apart, they didn't pass laws for any of that. They just made edicts, but people were well-trained enough that a lot of people went along with it. When you look at what they did with that, only a fool would think some version of that isn't going to come back. And I don't mean specifically a pandemic narrative. It could be a new narrative. And if you don't do the new thing, then this too will be a morality play. That was a trial run. I think it was fairly successful. When they have whatever new thing they pull out in the future and they start making these new morality proclamations, you've got to do whatever to be a moral person, to support the latest cause, when they're offering their new laws with their false promises of salvation, for us as believers, it's going to be really inherent upon us not to fall for any of that. Because we're not bound. Our salvation is not hinging on God's laws. It sure as hell isn't hinging on laws passed by these people. I wound up getting off into a whole lot of stuff in our Christian specific segment today. I hope you got something out of it. I hope it made sense. I kind of wound up getting way off into a lot more than I intended to, but hopefully we kind of discussed it in a way where it helped somebody. That's always my goal. Hopefully you got something out of it. We're going to wrap up on that note. I appreciate you again stopping by. Hopefully you got something out of it. And as such, hopefully I'll see you back here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.